New York State Racing Parimutuel Wagering and Breeding Law, Section 102, provides that the New York State Gaming Commission shall consist of 7 members appointed by the governor by and with the advice and consent of the Senate. On Tuesday, June 18th, the New York State Senate confirmed 4 gubernatorial nominees to seats, thus affording the commission to establish a quorum and undertake action as a constituted body. This present meeting of the commission is now called to order. Ms. Secretary, will you please read the roll?
John Crotty. John Holcomb.
Present.
Barry Sample.
Here.
Todd Snyder.
Here.
Ms. Secretary, please have the record reflect that a quorum of qualified members are present, thus enabling transaction of business. By statute, a member shall be designated as chair of the commission by the governor to serve in such capacity at the pleasure of the governor or until his or her term as commission member expires, whichever comes first. No such designation has occurred, thus the commission has determined to select 1 member to act as a presiding officer for the purposes of this meeting. Gentlemen, would you care to select a presiding officer?
I nominate Todd Snyder to be our presiding officer.
I second.
That's
agreed.
That's fine with me.
Excellent. In that case, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you, Rob. I think a good place to start may be a simple introduction. I'll start with myself. I'm Todd Snyder, a recently seated commissioner on the New York State Gaming Commission.
John Crotty as well, a recently seated member of the Gaming Commission.
Barry Sample, Albany, New York.
John Polklumba, Clifton Park in New York City.
Also with us is the executive director and the general counsel to the commission. May I just ask them both to introduce themselves?
Sure. Robert Williams.
And Edmund Burns, general counsel.
Okay. Pursuant to New York State Racing Parimutuel and Wagering and Breeding Law, Section 103, the commission shall establish and supervise 4 divisions to respectively carry out responsibilities related to the regulation and enforcement of the following: lottery, charitable gaming, and horse racing and parimutuel wagering. By law, each division is required to be supervised by a division director to serve in such capacity at the pleasure of the governor. The governor has not yet named division directors, thus I have designated individuals from our agency to act in the capacity of a division director until we have a formal nomination. At this time, I'd like to introduce each of the division directors individually and ask that they provide a basic overview of the duties and responsibilities of their division. Let's start with the Division of Lottery, which is headed by Gardner Gurney. Mr. Gurney?
Good morning. This is Gardner Gurney. I have been the acting director of the Division of the Lottery for the past few months. Prior to that, I was the executive deputy and chief operating officer here at the lottery for the past 5 years. I've been with the lottery just under 25 years. The responsibilities of the lottery is to operate and administer all of our games as described or prescribed within Article 34 of the tax law, accepting those responsibilities that are assigned to the Division of Gaming. Division also by law has the responsibility for all aspects of promotional activities for video lottery gaming.
Thank you, Mr. Gurney. Next, Division of Charitable Gaming, Ms. Harvey.
Good morning. My name is Stacey Harvey. I am currently the acting division head for the Division of Charitable Gaming. I've been with the board or the commission for the past 4 years. Prior to joining the commission, I worked as an assistant counsel with the New York City Department of Buildings, counsel to the Housing Committee with the New York State Assembly, and assistant counsel to the Majority Leader's Office in the New York State Assembly. The Division of Charitable Gaming is responsible for the administration and oversight of the Games of Chance Licensing Law, the Bingo Control Law, and the Bingo Licensing Law, as prescribed by Articles 9A and 14H of the General Municipal Law and by Article 19B of the Executive Law.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. Next division is the Division of Gaming. Mr. Nielsen, will you Explain what the division does.
Good morning. This is Jim Nielsen. I've been in the lottery and gaming industry for a little over 30 years now. I've got a variety of experience in operations and finance and marketing and sales, so I've been involved in a lot of different things. Currently in charge of the gaming division, as well as a corollary role in the lottery operations. The gaming division is responsible for both video lottery and the regulation of the Native American casinos. On the video side, we control the operation and administration of the video lottery program at 9 casinos, as prescribed by Article 34 of the tax laws. And the regulation of the Indian gaming operation is the oversight of the 5 existing casinos, as defined by the various tribal state compacts pursuant to the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act.
Thank you. And finally, the Division of Horse Racing and Paramutual Wagering is headed by Ron Okram. Mr. Okram?
Good morning. I'm Ron Okram, and I'm currently the acting director of the Division of Horse Racing and Paramutual Wagering. Prior to that, I was the executive director of the Racing and Wagering Board, where I began in December of 2008. Prior to that, I worked for a government relations firm in Albany for 3 years, and prior to that, I served 22 years in the legislature in both the Assembly and the Senate. The Division of Horse Racing Paramutual Wagering is responsible for the supervision, regulation, and administration of all horse racing and paramutual activity as prescribed by Articles 3 through 11 of the state racing law.
Thank you, everyone, for providing an overview. At this moment, I'd like to turn it back to Mr. Snyder.
This is the inaugural meeting of the New York State Gaming Commission. As such, I hope all of you will roll along with us as we smooth out our process. The commission, as many of you know, is a successor to the Division of Lottery and the Racing and Wagering Board, and by statute, the legacy agency's authority, unfinished business, and rules have been transferred to and continue under the authority of the commission, as do all the functions, employees, and records of such former agencies. A mission statement has been prepared in draft form for our consideration to help guide the commission and the commission staff in performing its work. Hopefully everyone has taken a look at that commission. Does anyone on the commission care to discuss the draft? I would like to just ask our executive director if perhaps we could make a slight adjustment in the mission statement to address our role as overseeing the safety and welfare of equine athletes. I'm not sure that it has a reference in the mission, and if we could add that for my own purposes, I would find it useful. And hearing no other comment with that request, I move the adoption of the mission statement that has been prepared.
I would second with the amendment that Mr. Snyder has recommended.
Anyone opposed? I think we have a mission statement. New York State Racing, Paramutual Wagering, and Breeding Law 103.1 requires the commission establish a plan of organization. The draft plan of operation outlines the organization of the commission and details the significant duties and responsibilities of the organization. A draft plan of operation for the commission has been circulated to the commissioners. Does anyone care to discuss that draft? Hearing no discussion, a resolution adopting that plan of organization has been prepared by council. I would move that we adopt the commission resolution number 2. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I think we have a plan of operation. At this point, I'd ask the executive director to please make his report.
Certainly. At the last meeting of the New York State Racing and Wagering Board on January 31st, 2013, the position of commission executive director was formally empowered to undertake a wide variety of day-to-day administrative actions necessary for the continuity of operations. Additionally, the position was empowered by New York State Racing Parimutuel Wagering and Breeding Law, Section 103.1, to, quote, be responsible for the conduct of the administrative affairs of the commission. Pursuant to the delegation of authority and statutory charge, I have undertaken a variety of actions consistent with delegation and statute. These actions, which I have individually communicated with each of you, have included changes in racetrack and OTB plans of operation, approval of simulcast, use of capital investment funds, and other ministerial matters. Additionally, as acting executive director, I have approved various internal policies that are agency-wide, such as prohibiting gaming commission employees from purchasing tickets and claiming prizes, or conflicts of interest, political activities, et cetera, things of that nature. These I've done as well in the course of conducting the administrative affairs of the commission.
While the commissioners set the policy and direction, the responsibility for implementation of such policies and the conduct of the commission's administrative affairs is exercised by the executive director. The commission would like to formally designate that the conduct of the administrative affairs of the commission shall be executed by the acting executive director of the commission, including through appropriate delegation and supervision of such responsibilities as determined by the acting executive director. Additionally, while all reported administrative actions of the acting executive director are consistent with statutory authority and do not need ratification, we have determined it appropriate to ratify all such actions in the alternative and in the event such ratification may be required by law to effect such actions. The commission will faithfully fulfill all of their non-delegable duties and responsibilities pursuant to statutory law and rule. Notwithstanding that, a resolution regarding the ratification of staff actions and determinations has been prepared by counsel, and I move the adoption of that resolution, resolution number 4.
Mr. Snyder, if we could interrupt just a second.
Yeah. For those on the phone, this is Ed Burns. Mr. Snyder, we also prepared for the commission's consideration a further resolution to go hand-in-hand with the plan of organization that you've just adopted, which is consistent with statute and the scheme of the commissioners directing policy and making all of the major decisions of the commission, that duties on an ongoing and day-to-day basis in the administrative affairs are executed by the executive director and staff. In your materials, there's a draft resolution number 3 that follows the plan of organization that I would request that you consider, and I won't read the preambles to it, but the key paragraphs of the resolution would resolve that all final agency action in regard to rulemaking and adjudicatory proceedings, as defined in the State Administrative Procedure Act, shall be exercised by the commissioners. That's non-delegable duties that you have. And also resolve that the policies and directives of the commissioners and the conduct of the administrative affairs of the commission shall be effectuated by the acting executive director, including through appropriate delegation and supervision of such responsibilities as determined by the acting executive director, and that the acting executive director of the commission shall regularly report to the commissioners in regard to the foregoing matters. So it really just sets forth in a resolution going forward the structure by which staff and the administrative affairs will be reported up through you and have you as commissioners take the major actions.
If I may, let me just say it again and make sure we're all on the same page. Non-delegable duties will be executed by the commission because they are non-delegable. Delegable duties will be delegated to the acting executive director, executed by him, and reported to us.
Correct. That would be the proposal.
If I have the resolution number 3 in front of me, which seems consistent with your description, and I'd ask if there's any discussion.
Yes.
Mr. Crotty.
I'm fine. John Crotty. I am fine with this. I think it makes a lot of sense. I would feel a lot better, Ed, if I knew exactly what you meant. A big statement, you know, delegable versus non-delegable. If they've been defined in the law, let's put them in here. Whatever it is, you tell me. Because I don't want there to be ambiguity down the road, perhaps for the next commission or even this one, where you say that was not within the purview or within the purview. Let's have it clearly defined up front.
Right. Well, the rulemaking function by statute has to be exercised by you as the commissioners.
I'm fairly clear on what pieces are not, yes, or on what pieces we are exclusively responsible for.
Yes.
It is somewhat of a gray area as to where we can delegate, at least to me. I'm sure it's my own shortcoming, but it'd be very helpful to understand exactly what that is. Right? I mean, you have a sense of it.
Yeah. I think it's really up to you. If you chose to, you could make every decision that is afforded by statute, but I think we would all...
Actually, I don't think I can, right? I mean, by statute, I can't delegate everything.
No. You as the commissioners could do all the business of the commission if you chose to.
I understand. And we're saying that doesn't make sense. Exactly. It's not practical. It doesn't work. Fine. I agree.
Yeah.
How is that line defined?
Yes.
I think for both of our sakes, you know, we should know what that is. The statement, I agree with.
Yeah.
Todd Snyder, maybe this is a practical approach. My expectation, and I think that this resolution makes it formal, is that acting Executive Director Williams is going to be in frequent contact with us, and we are going to have an active dialogue about what it is that he's acting on. And by implication, we will be aware of those things that he believes have been delegated to him. What we're saying here is, as a starting point, anything that can't be delegated to him, obviously we're going to act on. Anything that hypothetically could be delegated to him, we're taking action to put in place a structure so we can have him act on it. But we can, and maybe this needs to be an adjustment to the resolution, but we can make a decision, even if it's a delegable authority, not to delegate it. And so maybe we need an explicit amendment to the resolution to make it clear that whereas we are setting up a blanket delegation of delegable authority, that there may be issues that arise that the commission would choose to act on in any event. And in that circumstance, that we retain the ability, the right under the law to retract that delegation, that blanket delegation. That would, I think, make it less necessary for us to define what may be undefinable, which is judgment calls along the way when we, the commission, will feel comfortable delegating something that we could delegate, but maybe we don't wish to. Or if you feel otherwise, we can go another way.
I agree with your logic. The reality of it is, though, these issues don't come up in the mundane circumstances which we're envisioning. Most of it is... I mean, it makes perfect sense. I don't think there's a need for us to sort of opine on a series of things where they've already established rule by rule and different functions of how you'd want to work. It's always that gray sort of offshoot one area where it's not sort of envisioned ahead of time. It would be much better for all of our sakes, I believe, to define some part of that role. If it's close, come back to the board. I don't need to circumvent anyone's sort of... You know, if Rob thinks it's a great idea, I'd probably agree with him. But if it's close, it's protection for Rob, and it's also protection from us in terms of saying we considered this, and now we think this makes sense as a body.
I completely agree, John, with your statement. The statement is, if it's close, we would want Rob to come back to the commissioners and say, you know, this is a close call. I think in concept you've delegated this authority to me, but I want you to think about it again. That, I think, falls under the first part of the statement I made, which is I am not only hoping and expecting, but we're sort of directing the acting executive director to be in frequent contact with us so that really he's not taking actions we're unaware of. And so the gray areas where you say, if it's close, we want to talk about it, he will have to surface to us. And in concept, maybe there's some language that can be put into this resolution that will make it explicit that areas where there hasn't been explicit rules set down are clearly require the acting executive director to call upon the commissioners and say, this is an area where we don't have explicit rules. How do we want to handle it? how
you're given a blanket delegation.
Correct.
I don't believe functionally works like that. In theory, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Talk me out of it, but I don't see how that protects Rob, frankly, and I don't see how that protects us.
What I hear you. What
I think it's clear what we are not delegating, but to me it's unclear what we are delegating.
That is true.
And we don't know. And
right.
I think that's your issue.
Yeah. I think it should be all.
We don't know what this encompasses. You know, I mean, we may all be comfortable with it, but I've been here 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't make that assumption that I know what I'm giving away.
And I don't mind giving it away.
Yeah,
but
you know what it is.
I agree with the concept that Rob should be making most of the calls.
My supposition in trying to move forward with something more blanket is that if we don't do something blanket, then we are going to be spending an awful lot of time day in and day out deciding what Rob can and can't act on. And so, wait. And so, I think what we could do is we could not make a blanket delegation, get a feel for it, and then come back to this issue.
You know, I completely agree with you. I mean, I understand. I mean, I know more from the Racing and Wagering Board, some of the decisions they make. I don't think that should, a lot of that stuff should come up here, frankly. You know, it should be dealt with. It's pretty clear as to where the rules come out and where the laws are. I agree. And having to come back here just seems like a lot of wasteful government stuff. Completely agree. Because it's undefined, it's an issue. It really is.
Okay.
There's administrative stuff that goes on a regular basis. If we can't define it, and you want to do it this way, I mean, I guess we could vote yes and figure it out.
Having had this conversation, you know, would it slow the wheels of administration inside the commission's day-to-day activity too much to ask our general counsel, Ed Burns, to see if he can craft a description of what is being delegated in a more narrow fashion, at least for the time being. It may be that 6 months into our brand new tenure, we will come back and say, we feel so comfortable with this, we can go back to the concept of a blanket, knowing full well that Rob is in frequent contact with us and that there isn't an accidental delegation that isn't clear to us and it isn't clear to him. So maybe we'll table this and ask Ed to sharpen it?
Or vote yes and say Ed's coming back with a list of what it is.
Or
we're all here now. Say yes. Another, I agree with it in concept.
Yeah, another suggestion, yeah. Perhaps the commissioners might want to consider adopting this and then refine it with a superseding resolution as we put more shape to it.
I think so.
This would give Rob the ability to handle the day-to-day type of affairs in the interim between now and your next meeting.
And at the course of the next meeting, review the decisions that have been taken and determine whether or not things are appropriate or inappropriate for delegation.
We've heard from Barry Sample. We heard from John Crotty. I want to drag John Pecombe into this. Do you have a thought?
I've been following.
Do you have a thought on this
Commissioner
resolution?
Crotty's line of reasoning. I agree with him 100%.
Okay, so would everyone be okay with what Ed has suggested?
I believe that's a smart way to go. We're all here. Vote yes. Next meeting, though, you'll have that list prepared.
We'll flesh it out more.
And Rob will come back and say, this is where I think some of the decisions that have been made over the last whatever period of time would fall under.
Excellent. So thank you for raising those concerns. I think where that leaves us is I will move the acceptance of resolution number 3, having had a good and full discussion of some potential issues, which Ed and Bob are going to come back to us with, and also report on the decisions that have been made under resolution number 3 as it's currently drafted, and we'll consider how and whether to narrow it in our next meeting.
Understood.
Anyone not in favor of adopting it?
I'm in favor of adopting it. It's not narrowing it. It's just understanding it.
Very good. Clarifying it. Clarifying it. Absolutely right.
Yeah, that's my issue. I don't know what the it is.
Right.
You know, that's...
Okay, so good with the notion that Ed's going to clarify it or think about ways to clarify it, and we will be back at our next meeting seeing how it has functioned in the meantime.
And what falls under each.
Right. Good?
Yeah.
I think we have a passed resolution number 3, which brings us back to where I was on resolution number 4, which I had moved the adoption of. Is that right? Yep. Which is, I it's the same issue, though.
We started it. Yeah, that's the same. You had started, and then you raised the this concern, and that's
to pick up with resolution number four. Resolution number four would cover the period when the Gaming Commission came into existence on February 1st, and there are provisions in statute that provide for continuity of operations between the legacy agencies and the commission. So Rob is acting executive director, and staff have, in the normal course, without making any major policy decisions, executed the practices of the legacy agencies.
And we're ratifying.
And if you recollect, I emailed you a laundry list of all the different elements of what has occurred.
Yeah. Right. And so the conclusion here would be agreeing that all of those actions taken in the normal course were lawful actions, but to the extent anyone may deem it necessary in the future for the record, they also be ratified as an extra step, too.
Okay, so let's just look at the resolution clauses of number four, if you have it in your books. And it's clear, we've had this discussion, that should any of those actions have required to be reviewed, that there is a procedure that can accommodate that.
Yeah, we were talking, for instance, on the licensing aspects of an individual's occupational license or a track license, et cetera, that there's procedures within the State Administrative Procedures Act that give a clause or give rise to a remedy for the aggrieved individual.
As well as procedures in the currently existing rules.
Okay, so with that, I'm okay with resolution number four, and I would just ask if there's any other discussion before I move for its adoption.
Why do you need this, Rob?
This is basically, we don't think we do.
Oh, yeah.
And if you read the resolution, it actually says that we don't think that anything that the ED has done so far requires ratification, but out of an abundance of caution, we've determined to make sure that...
It's basically a catch-all. If it turns out it was ineffective, then we're making it effective.
Okay.
All right. Other conversation? Other discussion? Then I move the adoption of resolution number four.
Yes, I was able to review the list that you emailed this morning, and as long as that list is what we're voting on, then I'm okay with it.
That's exactly what we're voting on. And that's an exemplar of the day-to-day type functions.
Understood.
That I've been acting on the delegation of authority and the statutory.
I think we have an adoption of resolution number four. Okay. New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law 104.19 authorizes the commission to promulgate any rules and regulations that it deems necessary to carry out its responsibilities. In that regard, the Commission will, from time to time, promulgate rules and rule amendments pursuant to the State Administrative Procedures Act. Today we have a few rulemaking items for consideration, and I'd ask Mr. Burns, the Commission General Counsel, to please explain each.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Snyder. There are two categories of rulemaking we would ask the Commissioners to consider today. The first one I would describe under a general umbrella of consolidation. As it currently exists, the rules of the Commission are in two different titles of the New York Code of Rules and Regulations, one in Title IX, the Legacy Racing and Wagering Board rules, and the lottery rules are in Title 21. And now that we've established the four statutory prescribed divisions of racing, gaming, lottery, and charitable gaming, we've undertaken to reorganize the rules and recodify them in a way that makes sense with the structure of the organization. In addition to that, so there'd be five titles in the reorganized rules: racing, charitable gaming, lottery, gaming, and general administrative rules. All of the substance of the current rules that are now in Title 21 and Title 9 would not be changed, but numbers would all be recodified throughout all of those rules. Some redundancies have been eliminated. There were some provisions of hearing procedures that were stated in several different places, but were all substantively the same, so we're eliminating redundancies there, and eliminating some obsolete references to statutes and cleaning things of that nature up, and making stylistic conventions consistent throughout the rules. And again, I would emphasize there are no substantive changes at all in this aspect of it. Section 128 of the racing law gives the commission specific authority to enact emergency rules to effectuate the transition. So this would fall under that category. We can do two things if you so choose. One is to adopt this consolidation as an emergency rule, which would mean it would be effective for 90 days upon filing, and simultaneously propose it as a permanent rule, which would open up the public comment period according to the State Administrative Procedure Act, and then in due course, when that comment period ends, it can be adopted as a permanent rule.
Is that your recommendation?
That would be my recommendation.
Any discussion? If there is no discussion, I would propose that we accept Mr. Burns' recommendation and that we adopt the rule revision on an emergency basis and also set it down under the Administrative Procedures Act for public comment.
Agreed.
Since we have an agreement.
Yep.
The second category of proposed rulemaking would be to codify in our rules agreements to allow us to continue to participate in certain multi-state lottery games. The New York Lottery participates in two different multi-state consortia of games. One is the Mega Millions Consortium of 12 states, and then there's a second consortium of approximately 30 states and territories that run the Powerball lottery. These groups get together periodically to revise their rules, and then it's up to each jurisdiction to then confirm that within their own individual state rules and regulations. What's proposed today is some revisions to the Mega Millions lottery that would change the what we call the matrix of the odds of winning particular prizes and the prize payouts that the multi-state Mega Millions Consortium has already adopted in principle and would be scheduled to go effect in October of this year. In order to be able to continue to participate in that game, working backwards through the Administrative Procedure Act, we would need to take action on that now in order to file it with the Department of State in July and in order to meet those deadlines and continue to participate in the Mega Millions game. The second aspect of the lottery rulemaking would be to put language in our rules to enable us to run what's called a raffle game, which would be a fixed number of tickets that would get sold on a multi-state basis. It's contemplated for a Halloween season game for the multi-state group, and sales for that will start in late September, scheduled to start in late September. So again, working backwards, we need to get that in the administrative pipeline if the commissioners deem that advisable. So these would be, this rulemaking is really the ministerial state ratification aspect of what the multi-state lotteries have in principle agreed to. And you have the various text of that rulemaking.
Right. Material. And I know we have that text and we have a memo in our materials. What I'd like to do, if I can, Rob, is to have you just make a comment that the commission staff has reviewed those rules.
Yes.
The commissioners being relatively new, we'd just like to get your view on those rules before we begin the administrative process of adopting them for the state, so that we can continue to participate.
Certainly. First of all, as Ed mentioned, the matrix change is something that was adopted by the consortium. So if we want to remain participating in Mega Millions, we would need to conform our matrix change. This is something that was first proposed a number of months ago at one of the consortium's conferences and was received by all the states that participate. So they're all planning on doing that.
Could I just ask, I understand that the multi-state consortium is changing its rules, and I understand that to participate in the multi-state consortium, we'd have to adopt them. Has the commission determined that it is in the interest of the people of the state of New York that we participate in the consortium, even under these new revised rules?
The commission staff, the lottery professional staff, has reviewed it and has determined that the change of the matrix is going to generate additional revenue for education, and that the structuring of it now will be more similar to the structure for payouts and for the increase of prizes as Powerball, which is a very popular game that ends up generating tremendous jackpot prizes. This structure will do something similarly. As you're probably aware, the higher the payout, the more play that ordinarily gets. This matrix change will accelerate the levels of the jackpots to make them more attractive for the individuals that are looking for those high power or high payout games.
That's very helpful. Is there any other discussion?
Nope.
Mary?
Nope.
Very good. Then I think I will move to adopt the proposed rules, which I understand are going to have another procedural step in July?
Well, what we do then is, now that the commissioners are voting to adopt that, we then administratively will effect all of the required filings with the Department of State and have them published in the State Register, and then after the public comment period ends, at a meeting following that, we will formally ask you to adopt them.
If I could add, I think the important thing on this is by undertaking this action today, we're going through the standard rulemaking process, not truncating any of the process, not going through emergency, allowing full public airing of it through the protections that are afforded through rulemaking.
Which is, I think, exactly what the commissioners would want.
Is there a timeline for the consortium that this has to be done by?
Well, we would just need to get our rules in place before the September 29th start of the raffle.
Oh, okay.
For the raffle game, for the Mega Millions and the Matrix.
Okay.
By
Mega Millions by in October.
So it's happening no matter what. You're either in or out based on the rule change?
Exactly.
How much more is it, do you know, or estimate?
The estimate on the raffle game, I've heard, is an additional perhaps $3.5 million for that one limited play. The raffle games will be limited in time.
Right, yeah. But the Mega, how much more? Incrementally.
We have projections, but I didn't bring them with me. I can certainly provide
significant
them.
Significant? I'm just wondering.
It'll assist. We assume it will assist on a more than an incremental basis.
Well,
you have games coming in like the Halloween game. Does anything go away because it wasn't that profitable?
No, this is actually supplemental to the games that we
so
have. We're actually cross-marking with some new scratch-off games as well that will tie in to the Halloween theme. So we'll be doing a couple of Halloween-themed games.
So you actually think that it'll increase the volume of sales in other games that we're already distributing?
It won't be
a cannibalization.
No, it won't be a cannibalization of that. Well, and with the cross-marketing of this game with the Halloween scratch-off games, it should both raise the two together.
Okay. I would add, too, that the way we've drafted the raffle game rule change, it would allow the commission to have flexibility to run similar raffle games in the future, whether entirely within New York State or as part of a multi-state consortium. So even though this particular Halloween raffle is contemplated for this fall, the rule is written in a general way that would enable the commission to run its own raffle games or participate in future raffle games.
Is anybody opposed to the rule?
No.
Okay. I think you have a rule.
Next item on
I was going to pass that to you anyway. Go right ahead. Yes.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. There are a number, now we're turning our attention to the racing division of the commission. There are a number of rules that are emergency rules that are currently in place that all stem from the recommendations of the governor's task force in 2012 that studied equine safety and the horse racing industry and made a number of recommendations to improve fairness of competition and promote equine safety. The Racing and Wagering Board adopted a number of those as emergency rulemakings that are currently in place and also proposed, had filed notices of proposed rulemaking on a number of those issues, too. I can kind of put those in three categories. One, involved, there are a number of rules involving the administration of corticosteroids, which are drugs that can be used to alleviate joint issues in horses. If done occasionally, the medical advice is that it might be acceptable, but when overused, could cause serious problems. So, among other things, the current emergency rules for the first time require trainers to report within 48 hours any administration of it. So it allows the regulators at the commission to accumulate data on the usage of it and allow for cogent rulemaking in the future on it, and lengthen some of the time periods before races that in which these drugs can be administered. The second category involves a drug, clenbuterol, which is a respiratory medication, but has also been found to have performance-enhancing effects and can affect both the health of horses and the fairness of competition. And rules have changed from banning them within four days of racing to 14 days of racing, which the medical experts thought would improve equine health and safety. And then finally, rules about claiming races. We have in place an emergency rule that would allow someone claiming a horse to be able to void that claim if the horse is vanned off the track during the race and becomes injured during the race. And having that rule in place would discourage someone from entering a horse of questionable health in the race in the hopes of having it claimed and passing on an injured horse to a new owner. So at a future agenda of the commission, we will place on your for your consideration the permanent rulemaking to affect some of these rules, and or if necessary to extend on an emergency basis, other of the rules. But some of them are in place and responsive to the recommendations of the task force now, and we wanted to just alert you to them at this point to prepare you for consideration of them in the future, and we will be sending you some materials and background on information that would enable you to give some due consideration to them before you actually take action to enact them as permanent rules.
We are on notice. We'll look for your materials.
I know it would be useful for me. I don't know about anybody else, but the report that was done by the task force, I didn't have access to that. If we could have
I will provide
a copy of that.
I'll provide that.
And within the confines of that, does it have a notion of how these issues are dealt with in other states, or the task force didn't take that in their inquiry? Did they get into that issue?
Yeah, the task force was very, very cumulative in their approach.
Okay.
I'd recommend reading that.
And I think the general consensus in the industry is that New York has one of the most robust and effective regulatory regimes in this area, and the goal would be to certainly remain as an industry leader in that respect.
Did anyone speak in opposition against these trainers, horsemen?
No. Well, in when the they were proposed with a notice of rulemaking, either no industry comment or supportive industry comment has been received. We have had no negative
zero
commentary.
Comments against?
No negative commentary.
Well.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing materials on these rules in the future. New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law 104.2 authorizes and requires the commission to hear and decide promptly and in reasonable order all license, registration, certificate, and permit applications and causes affecting the granting, suspension, revocation, or renewal thereof of corporations, associations, or persons engaged or seeking to engage in gaming activity. It is my understanding that from time to time, hearing officer reports will be prepared and presented to the commission for final adjudication. I have likewise been informed that there are several matters for which hearings have been conducted, but we are awaiting delivery of hearing officer reports. As you can tell from our conversation today, this commission intends to be a deliberative body, and I think it prudent for the commissioners to appropriately familiarize themselves with the underlying hearing materials before consideration of any appeal. Thus, I would appreciate receiving any relevant materials for cases with as much lead time as possible, and I would ask Ed and Rob to please do what you can to give us some time to read those materials so that we can act in a deliberate, fair, and prudent manner. I think at this time, not having other substantive business, we need to set a schedule for our next meeting. Do you have a proposal on that, or?
I don't. Would you like me to circulate to each of the members and see if we can lock down a
date? That would be helpful. I think if you would circulate maybe a couple of working dates, we'll all investigate our calendars and try to put something on.
Excellent. You're aiming for New York again?
If we can. Okay. Does that work for everybody?
Yes.
Barry, is that right?
Yeah. Time frame? Yeah, fine. Time frame? 30 days?
Yeah, I would think no more than 30 days.
Okay.
That, I think, concludes today's published agenda. Do any commissioners have other items that they'd like to present for consideration?
No.
Yeah, I'd just like to say it's a pleasure to work with all of you. Glad to be here with you. And hearing nothing else, the meeting of the New York State Gaming Commission, this first meeting of the Gaming Commission, is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.